when we look at the Hanukkah miracle, we know that the Cheshbonaim, the Maccabim, entered into the Beis HaMikdash, which was full of impure oil, and they searched and they found a pach echad katan, a little jug of oil that had the seal of the Kohen Gadol, and they were able to light this little vat of oil until they were able to make pure oil, which took a week's time. They were able to have this little oil at last 8 days. Very fascinating insight of the Sfarim. Where did this little pach shemen come from? What's the history of this pach shemen? What is so special about this pach shemen that it appeared almost miraculously? So here the Medrash tells us on the pasuk, Vayivaser Yaakov levado, when Yaakov Avinu was left alone in Parshas Vayishlach, Amar Rabbi Eliezer, shenishtasher al pachim ktan, that he returned. Rabbi Elazar says he returned for these little jugs of oil. Al tikri'i levado ela lekado, says that that's Canaan. He don't read it, and he was left alone. Leave it, he was left to retrieve his kat. Notes on this, magale amukos, al pach shemen shel Chanukah. What was this pach shemen? What was this jug of oil? This was a jug of oil that was going to be used in the future in the Chanukah miracle. As another Medrash tells us, another insight of the Sfarim, Hashem said, you were Moser Nefesh to come back for a little pach for me, chayecha, that I will do this miracle for your children, that they too will find this pach shemen. A similar Medrash, slightly different, it's found in source number 3, and the Hebrew is in source 1. The Siftei Kohen, the Shach on the Torah, says the following. Do not read it levado, but read it lekado. Where did this flask come from? When Yaakov placed stones around his head and then arose in the morning and found that they'd become a single stone, a flask of oil appeared, right? They sent me a Shemayim from heaven. And he poured it, the oil, onto the stone, and, right, consecrated as a matzeva. We spoke about this a few weeks ago. And the flask remained full. Then Yaakov knew it would be a source of blessing. That was the flask that he went back for. That's the flask that inaugurated the kalim, the vessels in the Mishkan. That's the flask that the woman of in the story of Eliyahu HaNavi had enough oil to sustain her family in Eliyahu HaNavi for a few months. That's the flask of oil that the Vadya HaNavi's wife had, that she said, I just have a little bit of oil, and she kept on pouring it onto all the jugs that enabled her to get enough money to sell to pay back the creditor. And that's the flask of oil that the Cheshbonaim found. Presumably, the Shach does not intend, says the Drash Dovi, Rav David Hofstadter, to imply that the oil that Yaakov Avinu discovered and that was used to anoint the Mishkan and vessels, the same oil, was in the possession of the woman of Sarfat, etc. Rather, we have to understand that there's some attribute that is shared by all of these miraculous oils. It's not like it was the exact same oil, the exact same pach. It's obviously a conceptual idea. There was something that was found at the moment that Yaakov Avinu wakes up from that dream and says, wow, this must be the Shar Shamayim, the gates of heaven. This must be the place of godliness. And that oil comes out of nowhere. And he pours it on the stone and makes it a matzeva, a house of God. There's something about that oil that Yaakov Avinu says, I need to go back for it. Because it was that oil that he wanted to pour on the Mizbeach in the Matzeva in Beit El, as the fulfillment of his promise to Hashem, if you return me in peace, I'll make this a house of God. And if there's something about this flask that continues throughout the generation, and that's connected to the story of the Cheshbonaim. And the question we have to ask ourselves is, what is the connection? What is the story of Yaakov Avinu pouring the oil on the Matzeva? Particularly, what's the story that Yaakov Avinu goes back for these Pachim Tanim? He is ready to endanger his life. And because he is so interested in this flask, it somehow embeds in this experience that we will be able to have a miracle happen with this flask thousands of years later, in the time of the Cheshbonaim. And the question, obviously, is, what's the link? What's the connection? It's interesting, Rav Eisenberger in Mesillas Bavavim points out, the war between Yaakov and Esav, Yaakovinu and the Malach of Esav was Odot Pach Hashemet, was about this oil. As if the Malach didn't want Yaakov Avinu to go back to retrieve this oil. And it's interesting, he says, that the fact that Yaakov Avinu forgot, right, Shachar Pachim Tanim, he forgot this flask, you know, brought everything, oh, I forgot those little bit of flask, came from his Gabru Klipat Yavan, came from the force of Yavan, albeit thousands of years later. Because we know that Yavan, who is Choshech, is darkness, is Golos Yavan. And Choshech and Shachach are the same letters. Is the whole idea of Choshech, of Lava, was Shech Shicham Torasecha, Lashkicham Torasecha, to make us forget the Torah, to live in darkness. So Yaakov Avinu needed to go back for this flask of oil, which is light. It's the war of light and darkness. It's the idea that Yaakov Avinu went back for the pach, for that little jug, and the malach hit him, vayaga b'kaf yerecho, the pach, the jug, turned into kaf, the thigh. There is a whole dynamic going on here, and ultimately the yerech, the thigh area, turned into the Yerech HaMenorah, the part of the menorah that we're able to use this pach to light the candles. Raposa, there's a lot going on here. This isn't just a war of Yaakov and Esav, or the Malach of Yaakov and Esav. It's a war over who's going to have control over these pachim kanim. Who's going to have control over this jug of oil? And this jug of oil, this pach, is a fight between the pach, which is the jug, and the kaf, which is the flipped around letters, which is the thigh. What is all this about? How are we to understand this? And obviously when we get an understanding of this, we'll get a deeper understanding of what our avoda, what our service on Chanukah is all about. The final issue that we're going to touch on the different levels, we have quite a number of levels here, my friends, today, Eretz Hashem, is the idea that Yaakov Avinu going back for these pachim kanim. Chazal say that Yaakov Avinu epitomized, if Avraham Avinu epitomized, you should serve Hashem b'chol levavcha, with all your heart. Yitzchak Avinu b'chol nafshecha, with all your soul, afilu shel no tal nafshecha, he was ready to die, al kiddush Hashem. Yaakov Avinu is b'chol me'oldecha, his wealth. We need to understand the whole idea of what b'chol me'oldecha is about, and how it interplays with Yaakov Avinu and the story of Chanukah as well. Okay, my friends, we have a lot to do today, so let's get started. First level, quite a number of what is this war about, what's the message of Chanukah, what's the lesson for our lives. Idea number one, Mesillas Bora Chasidus, a lot of ideas from Hasidic different writings, particularly in Bell's. He speaks about here again this idea that the Pachim Tanim Romeis L'Pach Shemen Shel Chanukah, it's a reference to the jug of Chanukah. V'hainu sh'Yaakov Avinu ratzah l'asot hachana l'daros l'neis pach ha-shemen. Yaakov Avinu, by insisting and going back for these jugs of oil, was preparing the road for the miracle of the Chanukah story. However, the asterisks of five, ulam sarah shel Esav navakimo, however, the archangel of Esav fought with him, and this is what it means, v'taka kaf yerech Yaakov efkoimo, and that the thigh of Yaakov was injured in the fighting. What is the idea of the thigh? So we know, this is a Kabbalistic idea, that all the different spheros, chesed, gvura, yesod, etc., correspond to different parts of the body. That's a famous idea. The hod is the thigh. So when they were affecting the thigh, they were affecting the midah of hod. Now, what's the midah of hod? We'll see a number of interpretations as we go on here today. One is, what is the glory? That's what literally hod is. The glory of Klal Yisrael is the emunah. What were the Yevanim trying to do? Lisgaber Yisrael v'lachnis b'hem machshavot kvira v'chachmon chitzoniot. Says the Bnei Yisachar, that what they've tried to do is to bring outside ideas, foreign ideas, to try to break the emunah, the connection that Klal Yisrael has with the Kadosh Baruch Hu. And that's what we say, v'atav erech amecha Cherubim and the Alamusim, Amanatal Lahem Ve'etzaratam. You, Hashem, stood at this time. You are the one, as we spoke about, by Yisrach Lo Hashemet. You are the one who healed Yaakov Avinu with that sunshine, with that burst of the Muna. And that's what the Hanukkah story is about again. The light, Vayisrach Lo Hashemesh, is the light. It's the light of the menorah. It's the light of healing, our Emunah. On this level, my friends, the war of Yaakov and Esav is a war, and it's a war throughout generation, and it's a war that came to the fore with the Misyavnim, with the Greeks. It was a war of Emunah, of the belief in God. And we know, Choshech, as we spoke about, Zu Yavon, Choshech is Yavon. And my friends, what does it mean, Sheikh? Sheikh, when Yisrael fell, they darkened their eyes. There are many ways to darken a person's eyes. We know the Malbim speaks about, by Makas Choshech in Mitzrayim, that it wasn't darkness, it was light. That they were so blinded by the sun, they couldn't move. To a certain extent, Choshech Zu Yavon, it was enlightenment. That they wanted to bring Klai Yisrael into their world, that Klai Yisrael was so blinded by the world of Yavon, their sculpture, their sport, etc., that they become entranced by this world. Lashkicham Tarasecha, either Septuagint, which brought darkness into the world. You want to have a Torah, great, biblical criticism. We'll learn it together as a literary classic, but not Torah Secha, a relationship with Hashem, to break our Emunah, to break the Bris Milah, the Shabbos. These are signs of oath, signs of relationship with Hashem. And we know, as Siva Shalom points out, is Kuntras on Hanukkah. V'zeh Yisot Shel Yehudi, LeYehudi Yesh Torah Shlema. We have a full Torah, Taryag Mitzvot. But Acha Yisot Shelo, the foundation, and again, that's the idea of the hip, where the body stands, is Emunah, it's Bitachon. That we know, says the Priya Aracha, called Nishyona Shel Yehudi Hein Be'emunah. All of our challenges are Emunah, because that's the Yisod. That's the foundation. That's why Yavon, one of the decrees was, right, Al Karen Ashur Shem Lechem Chelech Be'elkei Yisrael, that you have no portion in the God of Israel. You have no connection. It was a fight over Emunah. And this is why, when we light the Chanukah candles, what we have to understand is, that we have this relationship with Hashem. The Chanukah candles is about igniting this Emunah within us. And this is why when they saw in the next year that light and that energy came back, they established this holiday. And the holiday is to teach us Hashrash Emunah u'bitachum b'matavim achi kashim. Even in the times of the deepest darkness, you can never give up hope and always be connected to Hashem. And that this is a time of Chanukah where nisim, where miracles can happen again, because it's a time that our Emunah is accentuated, where we feel this deep connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. U'mahai taiman, for this reason, he notes in the asterisks in 7, we have by Chanukah, Mahadrin, Min Mahadrin, all these different levels which you don't see in most other mitzvot, because by Emunah and Bitachon there are many different levels. And that's what Chanukah is about, to reach the highest levels of Emunah that we can get, because this Tzadik Bebenato Yechia is the essence of what Chanukah is about. This was the battle, as Rav Pinkus talks about, that Yavon and Tzion, the exact same letters except for the Tzadik. The first letter, Tzadik Bebenato Yechia. What makes a Tzion over a Yavon? The Tzadik in him, the Emunah. And this is what we have to live by. That's the first idea. The battle was a battle on the Yerech, on the Hod, on the Pachim Ktanim, on Emunah, on that light where they wanted to darken us, they wanted us to forget Torah, and that we are able, when we light the Chanukah candles, not just to light candles, but we are reigniting within us Emunah. And hence we say Kapitel Tehillim. There are some that are suggested, like Kapitel, the last line, the Noam in Kapitel Tzadik of 90, 91, Yoshev, etc., Elyon, to some people say it 7 times, Mizrush Yerchanukah Nabai Ledovi, Kapitel Lamed, Radnut Tzadikim, Lamed Gimel, I believe. There's certain Kapitel Tehillim, some Shira Malos, but one can say anything. Shiros Tishbachos, it's a time of connection, it's a time of feeling closest to Hashem. That, my friend, is idea number one of what Chanukah is about. Idea number two of what Chanukah is about is found in the Sefer Agada of Rav Emanuel Bernstein. And again, he brings this idea down of the struggle of Yaakov and Esav, and he says that the Arizal explains when the bracket in 8 that Yaakov went back for items which others might have left behind out of conviction that no item is worthless. If he owns these jugs, it must be for a reason, and therefore it's out of a sense of mission that he goes back for them. Now, we can appreciate that another type of person would also go back for these items, yet for a very different reason, namely someone who's thoroughly materialistic and cannot afford to let any of his possessions go. This is the exact opposite motivation to that of Yaakov, represented by Esau's angel, yet expressed itself in the very same trip back to get the jugs. This, then, is a struggle between Yaakov and Esau's angels, with the angel looking to wear down Yaakov's sense of idealism in dealing with physical possessions. And indeed, we know the Ramban points out that the word vayaavek, which means to struggle, is related to the word lichabek, to embrace, referring to the clinch of wrestlers as they try to defeat one another. Each one was trying to defeat the other. The surest way for the angel to defeat Yaakov is by, quote-unquote, embracing him, by removing the barriers between their ideologies, darkness is really light, and getting Yaakov to relinquish any higher aspirations for physical possessions. Yaakov stands his ground throughout the night and maintains a sense of perspective regarding his physical assets as nothing more than a means toward an elevated pursuit. The story of Hanukkah is essentially the same struggle, trying to avoid the embrace of Greeks which seek to close the gulf between two very different perspectives on the nature of man and the value of physical possessions. For a Yavan, for an Esav, the possessions mean something in themselves. For a Yaakov, for a Klal Yisrael, they're a means to an end. Rav David Kohen, in his Sefer Yimei Chanukah, has many, many pages, a very long essay, on many different levels of connection. We're mamish touching the surface. The Sils Bavavon have the whole essay, we're not even touching, on the connection about Torah Shema Peh and Yaakov Avinu and Chanukah. We're just getting a taste. One of the things that Yimei Chanukah, Rav David Kohen, speaks about, is that the inyan of the Kedusha Sachomer, of sanctifying that which is physical. Shadam Mekadesh Jinani Achomer is 10 in the asterisk, Lavonat Hashem Yisparach, that we take that which is physical and we elevate it. V'liz Kadesh B'Kedusha So, Ho HaYisol L'Kedusha So Mikdash B'Yisrael. This isn't only a philosophy of Yiddishkeit, this is a foundation of what the Beis HaMikdash was about. It wasn't just a place of sticks and stones, it rather was a place which epitomized what Kedusha is about, how you could take an animal and be Mekadeshit, you could take light and be Mekadeshit. And this is why Yavon in particular had such a hatred toward the Beis HaMikdash. That's why I will speak about they made these they broke down the barriers that separated the where the Goyim were able to come, right? Partsu Chomos from Migdalai. They wanted to take away any separation. But not only that, they were metame the oil in the Beis HaMikdash. It wasn't enough just to throw away the oil. They wanted to metame it. They wanted to purify it. Why? Because the whole idea of the Beis HaMikdash is about elevating the physical. And that is contrary to what Yavon is about. And that is why we know that the Beis HaMikdash and Torah, says the Maharal, are smudim yachad, are interconnected together, because the Beis HaMikdash is the Shlemus HaOlam HaGashmi, just like you have the Torah, which is a whole lifestyle of connection to Hashem, where you feel Hashem's presence in a physical place. That's what the Beis HaMikdash represented. And that explains in 13, the Siach Yitzchak, who discusses that according to the Yavan mentality, we are here just to eat, drink, right? Be merry. We're just here to build and to enjoy this world. However, this is against the Hashkafa of the Torah. The Hashkafa Solama Shal Yavan, she Hashkafa Solam Shobali Chokhmos Chitsoniot. In that mentality, you can't elevate the world. What you see is what you get. It's whatever you can measure, that's what exists. It's very much the world of the physical, the weird world of the here and now, the world of the seven. There's no concept of aim. There's no concept of going up beyond yourself. There's no idea that you can take something physical and you can elevate it. So now I understand, says Yimei Chanukah, the Sefer Yimei Chanukah, Yaakov Avinu, who represents Bechol Ma'odecha, which the Rabbeinu Bechaya points out, is that classic moment when Yaakov Avinu pours the oil on the Matzeva and he makes a promise to Hashem, whatever you give me, I will give you a tenth, that Yaakov Avinu dedicates his money toward Hashem. At that moment of Bechol Ma'odecha, that moment of dedicating his money to Hashem, Yaakov Avinu pours the oil on the Matzeva, on this altar. What happened to that stone? So we learned this a few weeks ago. The Ramban brings down from Chazal that HaKadosh Baruch Hu takes that stone, and that stone becomes the Eved Hashtia, becomes the cornerstone of Beis HaMikdash. Rabbosai, now we understand it on a so much deeper level. Yaakov Avinu, who is the Shoresh, who is the core of Bechol Ma'odecha, that you can take your money, you can take something physical, and you can elevate it. And he went back for these Pachim Tanim because he understood their spiritual value, not their physical value. He understood that everything we have is to be able to elevate it and use it for Hashem. At that moment, when Yaakov Avinu pours that oil on the Matzeva, he takes that Matzeva and he says, I'm dedicating this place to God. That place becomes the Beis HaMikdash. That oil becomes, philosophically, the oil of the Chashmonaim. That is the battleground where the Yevonim take that Beis HaMikdash and try to defile it. And the Jews take that Pach Shemen and elevate it. They purify the Beis HaMikdash. They are continuing the link of Yaakov Avinu. V'lachen kishabao Yisrael, the end of 13, l'tzahar t'amikdash mashatimo to yavan, that when they came to repurify it, reinaugurate it, ba kocham shalbei chashmarim l'tzahar t'amikdash, when they're coming to purify the space of Mikdash, it's ayadei oto pach Hashem, and it's from that very jug of oil that Yaakov Avinu pours on that matzeva, right, and then gets refilled, and he goes back for it, because he understands that he's the model for us, that whatever physical possessions we have, and wherever, even our attributes, our kochos and nefesh, whatever we have, are gifts from Hashem to be used for spiritual purposes. Why did Hashem make somebody rich? To be able to help other people out. Why did Hashem make somebody talented? To be able to use their talents for tzarchei tzibur, for the benefit of others. That's why we have whatever we have. That has to be our outlook. That has to be our mindset. It's not about me. What else can I gain? But where can I give? How can I build? How can I share? That's what Yiddishkeit is about. That was the ma'avak, the struggle between Yaakov and Esau. And that's why, returning back to Roy Bernstein, turns out that our conflict with Greece was one of definitions. How to define meaning, how to define value, how to define success. Continuing 14, we went to war with the help of Hashem, we were successful. The crucial question, however, is at what point did we win? We will appreciate in 15 that the answer to the question depends on one's definition of victory, and it's actually part of the conflict itself. If we were to consider ourselves victorious by virtue of having won the battle alone, then we would have lost the war with Greece, for they would have succeeded in having us define victory in their terms. Hence, it was critical that as soon as the Maccabim secured victory on the battlefield, they made their way on the same day to the temple to restore the divine service. They were not prepared to let even one day pass without giving higher meaning to the military victory, namely, as a basis for reconnecting with Hashem through the temple service. Chanukah, they rested on this day. They reinaugurated the temple on this day. It's not about a physical victory. It's about a spiritual victory. That's the idea of the word mahadri. Rashi explains the word mahadrin refers to the Aramaic word of hadar, to return, to pursue. These are people who are not just satisfied with a physical war. They went to pursue a higher value by putting the crown of full meaning, full victory to the day by finding the Pach Shemen. So my friends, level one, what was the war about? The war was about Amunah, the Hod, that which holds us, that which sustains us. And Hanukkah is a time to rededicate ourselves in Amunah, to look at those candles and to speak about Shiros, the Tishbachos to Hashem, to see Hashem in our lives, to tell stories of Hashgacha Prati by the Hanukkah lift, to really feel this connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The level of, the second level is the level of the war of Yavan, is the war of value in this world. Yavan is Yafta Lakim Liefed, of enjoying the physical world, the physical beauty. There's a lot to enjoy, there's a lot to appreciate, but you appreciate it for its own sake. It's static, it's not dynamic. Yiddishkeit is about you take that oil, not to for yourself, you take it to use, to look at all the things that were used for. In the first idea of the Shach, they used it to anoint, to inaugurate the Kalim, the vessels of the Beis HaMikdash. The Eliyahu used it to be able to sustain a woman. Elisha used it to be able to sustain a woman. It's for purposes of building, of helping, of stucco. It's about going beyond yourself, not just for self. And that's our struggle. That when we are sitting by the Hanukkah licht, and there's, we spoke about it in the past, the idea of giving gifts on Hanukkah, wherever it comes from, and there are Torah sources for it, but we have to understand that whatever we get on Hanukkah, to have a conscious effort to say, oh, that a beautiful scarf, I can use it to, you know, keep myself warm so I shouldn't get sick, to be a better Avod Hashem, whatever it is, right? So we able to elevate all that we have for Avodas Hashem. That has to be the mindset that we approach the Hanukkah festival. Third approach. Lekach v'libuv Rav Shor. And he says, as we saw, Vayar ki lo yachol, source 16, lo vayga v'kaf yericho, v'teka kaf yerech yakob bevakol imo, and that's why Klal Yisrael don't eat the Gid Hanasha, that sinew, until today. What is the idea of the kaf hayerech? So he says, as we saw, it was pegam b'midat hod. He was striking him in this quality of the midos of hod. What is hod about? So we know that hod has the idea of hodah, of being able to admit, of hachna, of being able to recognize. As when Leah called Yehuda by that name, she says, Hapam Odeh Tashem. And Rashi notes, I took more than my portion. When a person is able to admit, I have more than I deserve, that's a hodah. That's an admittance. That's an acknowledgement. That's what hod is about. And that's why we're called Yehudim. Because this is our essence. The Mitzvah Shudim Mashi Odeh Ki Akol Shayach Labor Yisparach. And it's really dovetailing our last level. When I realize that everything belongs to Hashem, it's not about mine, my possession, nothing is mine. When you have a sefer, you write, L'Hashem Ha'aretz Melu'a B'chazka B'rishut, it's Hashem owns the whole world. I'm just borrowing this, it's not mine. When I have that understanding, I recognize that everything comes from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And this is what Yavan tried to take away from us. We know in the Sefer Daniel, when he has, Nebuchadnezzar has this dream of the different kingdoms. So Yovan is described as v'yarchesei dei nachash, that his thigh is that of Nechoshet, which is bronze. So he says the thigh is the part of the body that a person uses in order to bow down. When you have a bronze thigh, it means you don't have the ability to bow down, that you stand upright. And bronze is from the idea of brazenness. What Yavam wanted to do was to take away the idea that we owe anything to Hashem, that we have any relationship with Hashem. Don't bow down. Stand strong. Stand upright. Realize that you're in control. Realize that whatever your mind can ascertain is true. Don't move beyond yourself. Don't acknowledge that there is a being outside of yourself. That intransience, that inability is to bend, is what Esav and Yovan and all of these mindsets are trying to do. And that was the war of Yaakov and Esav, and that's the continuation of the war with Yovan as well. It's being able to stand firm. And this, my friends, explains why the Svarim say in 19 that Takakaf Yerech Yaakov caused the Beis HaMikdash, as the Shlach Kodesh points out, that the tables Yam, Rakia, and Kisei are all related in the Yerech, in the thigh, that the Kaf HaYerech is the Kaf of the Kisei Kavod, of the Throne of Glory, that what Esav was trying to get out, and Yavon as well, is that the intransigence is not just in who we are as people, it's to get to the core of Klal Yisrael, the heartbeat of Klal Yisrael, which was the Kiseh Kavod, the place of the Beis HaMikdash, the Hod we know, the ultimate place of Hachna, the ultimate place of bowing down was the Beis HaMikdash. As we say, Vishtachvu L'Hashem B'Har HaKodesh, will bow to Hashem on this mountain. So what they wanted to do by being metamed the Beis HaMikdash, by impurifying the Beis HaMikdash, is that we shouldn't have a place where we are giving ourselves over to bowing to Hashem, to recognizing. Bowing is a form of recognizing that there's a greater force than yourself. And now I understand that when the Yevanim were victorious, source 20, they then had, by the Upartzu Chomos Migdalai, there were 13 places where they try to break into the fence. HaChashmonaim Chazru V'Gadru. The Chashmonaim came and they refenced it in, they fixed it up. Listen to this! V'Gazru K'nedam Yud Gimel Yishtach HaVayot K'nei Kol Pirtza. And they enacted that at every one of these places that was broken into, to bow down. Because that's the greatest way to overcoming the Yevanim, to be able to bow down to Hashem, to be able to realize that everything that we have is Hashem's. And is it any wonder, my friend, that how did Chazal dedicate this day? The following year, they dedicated this time for what? Lahalo lahodos, halon hodaya. Lahodos means to admit, to acknowledge, to recognize that everything we have belongs to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that the whole world is His. And that the Beis HaMikdash was the heartbeat of that idea. So now I can appreciate just taking this a little bit further, my friends. That the only one, this is the Chidah at the end of 21, top of 22, the only one of the Shvatim that did not bow down to Esav when they met, right, each one of them bowed down, was Binyamin. Binyamin had the ability to stand strong, not to bow down to Esav. So Binyamin, right, he wasn't born yet. So Binyamin is the place where the Beis HaMikdash is found, where the only person we bow down to is the Kodesh Baruch Hu. And that's what Binyamin represents. And it's no wonder that Chanukah in the Chodesh Kislev, and we know every month corresponds to a different Shevet, depending on how they traveled, at least according to one opinion. So the Shevet of Kislev is Shevet Binyamin. Because this is our ability to stand strong and not bow down to an Esav, not bow down to a Yavon, not to capitulate to their ideas, but only to recognize that everything comes from a Kodesh Baruch Hu. If we could take this idea one step further, my friends, and then we'll summarize this idea and move to the final piece of our study. He brings here from the Shlach HaKadosh, who says that Yaakov Avinu, as we spoke about, went back for the Pach. The Pach represents the jar of oil. The Pach is written Pei Chaf Sofit. That's how Pach is written. As we saw, the Esav comes to attack him by the Kaf, by the thigh, which are the same letters reversed, Chaf Pei Sofit. The Shlach HaKadosh notes that the letters themselves represent the essence. The Chaf, the letter Chaf, represents the Kaf Yad, the palm of my hand. And the next letter, Peh, represents my pet, my mouth. So notes the Shlach HaKadosh very interestingly. You can have a Chaf that is open, which means an open hand, the final Chaf. You can have a Chaf which is more closed, more encircled, and that's a closed fist. You can have a Pei which is enclosed, that's the regular Pei, which means a mouth that is shut. And you can have, the way we write it in a Sefer Torah, a final Pei which is long, which is open. Notes the Shlach HaKadosh the following. The correct order is to have Pei, which means a closed mouth, shtika, which is a mean that we know of Binyamin, of not to talk so much. Lo matzati laguf tov mishtika, I found nothing greater than silence. And Lekvach Volibuv elsewhere points out, that's the fighting of the guf, of the body, of Yavan, that the best way to combat their sport in sculpture is to do what's best for our body, which is shtika, which is silence, because the Tzelem Elohim is found in our dibur, in our mouth, and we know when to say, when not to say. So when you have the regular pad, which is closed in, that's good. And the open hand is the chafsofit, which is long and open. That's the way it should be. Your mouth closed and your hand open to give. What did Esav want to do? He wanted to have the regular chaf, which is more enclosed, which is close your hand. Don't open it. Don't give out tzedakah. Don't give to others. And a pad that's open, the pad sofit, say whatever you want. And this was a struggle. And that is why, when we understand what we've been speaking about till now, that the whole idea of this fight is about priorities and knowing why we have what we have. And when we understand the whole idea of Hodah, of appreciating that all we have comes from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so when I'm able to integrate that, then I know that I'm able to open my hand and be able to give tzedakah. I recognize that Hanukkah is the time to focus in on the pach, pei, chaf, sofit, and not the kaf, not the thigh, to be able to have a closed mouth, to use my mouth, lahalo, lahodos, to thank Hashem. And there are those who don't even have a sicha batela, to talk, you know, nonsense or irrelevant things. The first half hour the candles are lit. And an open hand, and we know, the kids are Shulchan Aruch in 24a points out, that marabim stoka b'mei Chanukah, we increase, are giving a tzedakah during the days of Chanukah. They try to destroy, says the Prima Gadim, the three pillars of Torah is Torah, Vodah, Milos, Chasadim. We light the candles, Torah, or representing Torah. We have the Hallow and Odaya, the thankfulness, the Hallow corresponding to Avodah. And for Gemilos Chasadim, we have the idea of giving gifts. And my friends, this is the time of Chanukah. It's a time of Chanukah to be marbit, to be able to spread more Torah, to spend more time on our avoda, and to spend more time on tzedakah. And as the Zichron Yitzchaskut notes from Rav Meir Silverberg in 24b, that the whole idea of giving tzedakah, obviously, it is kipshuto, it's giving money. Ulam bepnimius ha'inyan. But on a deeper level, we can say that everyone davening for another person, that is also one of the highest levels of tzedakah we can give. There are so many shvurei lev, there are so many broken hearts, there are so many people struggling with so many different things. And I don't know about you, but I'm just hearing, I'm afraid to even open my emails, one sad story after another. So many people to daven for. A tremendous aspect of tzedakah is being able to sameach nafshos b'nei Yisrael, to be able to make other people happy. So my friends, let's see what we've seen till now. We'll get to the final level. Idea number one, emunah. That's the yisod, that's the foundation, that's the whole. Chanukah's a time. Look at those candles. Feel that closeness to Hashem. He's down there. It's the Ur HaGadlus. It's that secret hidden light from creation story. It is connection to Hashem. You feel being kivyachol in the presence of the Beis HaMikdash when you light Chanukah candles in your home. The second idea is, why do we have all these physical things? Esav says, it's for me. You know, I can't leave that behind. Everything I have is mine, mine, mine. Yaakov Avinu says, it's mine in order to, b'chol maldecha, to raise it to a higher level, to be able to give everything to Kodesh Baruch Hu. That's why b'chol maldecha is last. Chol avavcha, chol nashecha, b'chol maldecha is even harder. To take my physical possessions, that which I have, to give my life, that's, you're right, it's hard. But to give everything I own to Kodesh Baruch Hu, that's also equally as challenging. That is what Chanukah is about. To take that Chanukah geld that you give your children and make sure that they give a meiser, they give a percentage of tzedakah. To have a mindset that we take what we have and be able to see how we can use it for Kodesh Baruch Hu. That has to be our focus. The third idea, Lekach V'Libuv, the war over Yavan and Esav is a war of hod, of not being able to bend down. Their Yerech is that of Nechoshech, of bronze, of being able to be steel. We bow down. The whole fight over the Beis HaMikdash was a place of bowing down to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And the whole idea of Hanukkah and Partu Chomos V'Talai, that they had and instituted to bow at every place to be able to counter the effect of Yavon. It's all about me. You don't bend to anybody. It's all about your wisdom. Where we recognize that everything comes from Hashem. We're able to have the pach in the right order, a closed mouth just used, lahalo lahodos, to praise Hashem, and an open hand to be able to give tzedakah, to be able to daven for others. Again, the pach, using our mouth in the correct way, to be able to give tzedakah. That's the pach. That's the pach shemen. That's the jug of oil. I will just note here at this point, before moving to our final level, that there is many places to give tzedakah to, and every place is worthy, and whenever a person gives, matova manaim. I just want to note one organization which is very, very special if you're not familiar with it. It's called Ner Echad. And you can look at it on the website of joinnerechad.org. Join Ner Echad, NERECHAD.org. It's in memory of Rebbetzin Kanievsky, where it's a whole idea of giving a dollar every time you light. Right? There's a whole system of doing it. They come out with a newsletter every week. It's really like a sisterhood of women davening for each other, and connecting to each other, and being mechazik each other, and strengthening each other through the mitzvah of tzedakah, through the mitzvah of helping out on Eretz Yisrael, the poor of Eretz Yisrael. It is an organization where when you join, you feel connected to something higher than yourself. And it's an organization that newsletter and the understanding of where my money is going. It's an Indian of giving tzedakah before lighting Chanukah Shabbos candles, to be able to understand that I am connecting to the Eretz Yisrael, I'm connecting to Aniyim, I'm connecting to great tzaddikim, and I'm connecting with other people in Klal Yisrael at the same time. It's a tremendous light. It's a wonderful thing if one is not connected on Hanukkah to be able to join the Ner Echad .org and be able to become part of this wonderful organization. Final idea. And this is the one that I really want to focus in on the few minutes that we have left. Back to the Drash Dovi himself. And he says, in order to understand these questions, let's examine the events leading up to the miracle that occurred for the widow of Avadja Navi. The Navi relates that Avadja rescued 100 prophets from the wicked Queen of Zevo and provided them with food and water. For this purpose, he spent all of his own money and even went so far as to borrow money with interest from Yehoram, the son of Ahav. Continuing in 25, Avadja then passed away, and his creditor came to take his two sons as slaves as payment for his debt. Avadja's widow pleaded with Elisha to save her, and her salvation came through a great miracle. The small quantity of oil that she had in her home multiplied exponentially until she had enough oil to pay off the debt to the creditor, enough so she could live off the remainder of oil for the rest of her life. Considering that a miracle had occurred in order for Avadja's widow to repay her husband's debt, one might ask why the miracle didn't occur for Avadja himself. Why was it Avadja miraculously given enough money to provide for the needs of the Nevi'im that he had rescued? Seemingly the answer is that the guardian angels of evil are sometimes granted so much power that the only way they can be overcome is through an act of a serious nefesh against the wicked in this world. Such a display of self-sacrifice prevents the forces of evil from controlling events in the world. This is a concept that we learn. The Briscoe Rav says that Yaakov fought the angel primarily to take away its power in heaven, and he was therefore told, after he defeated the angel, for you have fought with an angel and with men, you have overcome. According to this approach, the reason Avadja was not miraculously provided with resources to support the Nevi'im is clear. At the time, the evil King Ahav and Queen Zevo were in power, representing the forces of evil, and the ascendance of evil was so great that it even granted the ability to murder all of Hashem's prophets. Since the only way to combat the evil they represented was through Mesiras Nefesh, Avadja had to surrender all of his property and to jeopardize his life and his son's freedom in order to succeed in saving the Nevi'im. The Mesiras Nefesh demonstrated by Avadja and his wife is what led to their family's miraculous deliverance. The Mesiras Nefesh saved the entire generation. Now we understand why the miracle that was performed for the widow of Avadja came from the same source of the flask of oil that Jacob retrieved before with the angel of Esau's guardian angel. Yaakov Avinu is the epitome of someone's Moser Nefesh. He was Moser Nefesh, listened to his mother to get the brachos from his father. He's Moser Nefesh to go back for these Pachim Tanim to combat evil. and therefore with this flask of oil, with the light it produces, symbolizes the abundance with which Hashem blesses those who demonstrate mischievous nefesh to combat evil. Just moving to the next page, the end of 29, the flask of oil that the Chasronim has discovered, which retained the Kohen Gadol seal, certified it was untouched by foreign hands, is symbolic of the power of mischievous nefesh that Jewish people possess, the power that cannot be overcome by evil. Evil, throughout our history, we have suffered from persecution that has hampered our ability to learn Torah and observe the mitzvot, and that has taken a terrible physical toll on our people. But there's one thing that none of our oppressors have ever been able to take away from us. Our mesiras nefesh, our ability to give our all for the sake of Hashem's honor. You know, before finishing this piece in Drash David, I just want to add here one of my favorite ideas from the Sefer, the Inside Story of Yaki Tauber, based on the writings of Lubavitcher Rebbe. And he asks the question, we say in the Shema, we just mentioned this, B'chol levavcha, b'chol nafshecha, b'chol ma'otecha. You should love Hashem with all your soul, with all your being, right? If Hashem takes away your soul, and then b'chol ma'otecha, with all your might. So the obvious question is, like, what can be beyond, you know, your body, your soul? Like, well, you know, it seems to be anticlimactic. It should be b'chol ma'otecha, with all your might, with all your money, then levavcha, then nafshecha. So, the precise meaning of the word ma'od in 22 in the middle is very, or more so. Thus, Hasidic teaching understands the verse as instructing us to love God with all your veriness, with all your beyondness. That is above and beyond your currently defined self. The Torah is saying, after you've attained your ultimate, with all your heart, with all your soul, in your love of God, reach higher yet. Relate to Him on His terms, surmounting the finiteness of your own being. The human being possesses a capacity. Indeed, the quest for self-transcendence is the quintessence of our humaneness. This is alluded to in the Hebrew word for human being, Adam, Aleph, Dal, and Mem, which is the same three letters as Ma'od. Hence, the Torah refers to this transcendent ability as your beyondness. This is not an injunction to annihilate the self in pursuit of a higher supra-human existence. Your beyondness is a deeper dimension of your own self, previously obfuscated by your own self-perceived limitation. The new you is, in fact, the true you. And he says you see this in the birth of Tamar's twins. First, you have the idea of Zerach, who represents shining forth, the yield of our life's labor to transform darkness into light. Right, Zerach came out that, you know, and she put a red string on him. The first kid stuck out his hand. And then Peretz came out. Peretz is our bursting forth quality, the unique human ability to surmount one's own seemingly inherent limitations. And then what happened? In a sense, Zerach has been born twice. He had a partial birth before Peretz was born, but his true and complete birth followed that of Peretz. So too, there are two levels to the Zerach of man. He shines forth and accomplishes much by utilizing his natural talents and ability. That's the putting out of the hand. But this only represents a fraction of his true potential. He then must birth forth. And when you burst forth, you mean that you move beyond yourself, free of the confines of inclination, habit, and environment, to pave the way for his true and ultimate luminescence. This, my friends, is what the Pach Shemen represents. The thread of the Pach Shemen throughout history is the idea of Mesiras Nefesh. Yaakov Avinu going back for this Pach Shemen in order to be able to utilize it, to pour it on the Matseva Beit El, he's being Moser Nefesh for this holy Pach Shemen. Throughout history, when you see all these different stories, the common denominator theme is Mesiras Nefesh, is giving yourself entirely. And that's what the War of the Chashmonaim are about. That's what the story of Hanukkah is about. In fact, the Siva Shalom, Source 31, says that the whole idea of Hanukkah is that we need to understand that on every day a bas kol comes out, Shuva Banim Shovavim, to return to Hashem. And many of us don't hear that voice. On Hanukkah there's an awakening and we have to grab that awakening. What would take the entire, all year, a real Mesiras Nefesh to reach this level, we can access on Hanukkah. Hanukkah, we can push beyond ourselves that Zerach Peretz dichotomy in a much easier way, because the whole yesod of Hanukkah is that of Mesiras Nefesh. Indeed, Rav Reitz, who has such a beautiful essay in his Sefer Kriye Moed, and he calls the essay, it's a Rosh Hashanah Mesiris Nefesh. This is what Hanukkah is about. And I ran out of space, so I could do very little of this essay. But here's the point of this essay. He says, the Ramah Paskins in Shulchan Aruch, in source 32. If a person didn't say Al HaNisim on Hanukkah, in Birkat HaMazon, and by the way, I neglected to say, where do we say the Al HaNisim both in Shor Esrei and in Benching? By Modim. By Modim. The whole idea of Hanukkah is to bow, is to give thanks. That's the whole essence, right? But let's say you forgot, so, and you remember before you said the Harachaman, so you can say, Hashem, please do for us miracles and wonders like you did in those times. And indeed, the Sfarim say that this is a gewaldic time for miracles to happen. Ask Rav Reitz, well, what do we do in order to be able to be zochah for these miracles? What do we have to do? So he notes in 33a, the very famous idea of the Bach, that how could the Yevanim have any ability to be gozer to decree anything against us? It was only because they became weakened in their avoda, in their service, and therefore they could come and declare things that we weren't allowed to do. And when the Chashonaim were moser nefesh, when they were moser nefesh, to be able to do Hashem's will, at that moment, they were able to be victorious. The yesod of the Hanukkah is 34, Mesiris Nafshem Shel HaChashmonaim. It's the ability of the Chashmonaim to give of their entire self, Levater HaChayayim. 13 individuals going out against all these elephants and all these tanks and all this army. They were ready to Moser Nefesh in order to be able to bring back the Beis HaMikdash back to its holiness. And he notes here a gewaldic idea. The Shem Shmuel brings down here when it says, Shemitchilet Rashlu Bavodas HaMikdash, when they were weakened, it doesn't mean they didn't do the Avodah. They still brought the Korbanos. They still did whatever they needed to do. The weakening, however, Haitrashus, double underlining 34, was Shavavaratam, Hitbatam, Begishatam, El Havodah. It's when the Malachi, the Sefer, the Navi Malachi speaks about it. There was their attitude toward the Beis HaMikdash. Kemitzos Anashim Elumata, habitually. Lo Hislavus, Lo Rikshe Nefesh, without passion. That was Hitrashus. It was Hitrashus Echuti, not in quantity, but in quality. And therefore, our tikkun on Hanukkah has to be, and back in 33b, the Sfas points out this clearly. It has to be the idea of Mesiris Ratzon, of showing our entire being that we want to do Avodas Hashem. And as Rav Biederman points out in Source 40 in Berachayim, all year round, if we have this lackadaisical attitude toward our Asiyas HaMitzvos, not so good, but we can get away with it. Not so on Hanukkah. On Hanukkah, E.F. Charlie Pasher, you can't come to any compromise. You have to fill all of Hanukkah. Our davening, our halal hodaya, our lighting the candles, our learning has to be with Hislava Satsuma. That's the candle. Always growing, always moving up. And that ability to move beyond their comfort zone, which for many of us is our Mesiris Nefesh, is what takes of us. Mesiris Nefesh is really about moving out of our comfort zone, giving something of ourselves. The fact that I think about my brachos during Hanukkah, I'm moving beyond myself, that sets the standard for the whole year. It sets the seeds. It builds the building of the whole year. We'll be on an entirely different level. Is it any wonder the Sfarim note in 37, that, well, generally you have to only pay a certain amount in order to be able to do a mitzvah. By Hanukkah, you have to be chozer al p'tochim. You take stucca. You sell your shirt, whatever it takes. Why? Because Hanukkah is about the Sefer Nefesh. Hanukkah is not just trying to do it and to be yotzei, right? Tuma, who's your sleeper that could have lit tamei oil? It's not about that. It's about pushing ourselves beyond. It's about Yaakov Avinu who endangers herself for those bachim tanim. It's about Ishan Ovadia and Ovadia who supports these 100 Nevi'im even though it cost him money and it literally is going to cost him his family. He pushed himself beyond. That's what Hanukkah is about, to understand the whole idea of Yiddishkeit is moving beyond ourselves. Yavon is about self. Yavon is about the I. It's about the ego, which is easing God out. Our focus is a Kodesh Baruch Hu. Is it any wonder that one of the hints of Hanukkah is by the Akedah, Vaniva Nar, source 36, Nelcha Ad Ko, I and the boy will go until there. Where was the there? Ko Cafe is Hanukkah. Where were they going? They're going to the Beis HaMikdash. What's the whole idea of the Beis HaMikdash? What's the whole idea of Hanukkah? Serious nefesh. Avraham Avinu was ready to sacrifice Yitzhak Avinu in the base by the place of the base of Mingdash. That's what it's about. Kol Yisarecha, same cafe. This is embedded in our children. What is the miracle of Hanukkah about on this last level? It's about serious nefesh. The whole idea of Hanukkah was the Chashmonaim push themselves beyond for the sake of the Kodesh Baruch Hu. Hanukkah is about engendering in us that same feeling of not being lackadaisical, not taking things for granted, not to have this hidrashlan, this weakening, but pushing ourselves beyond where we're at in order to be able to be the best Eved Hashem we can be. On a practical level, my friends, I'd like to end with one final idea. Let's just see what we've seen and then we'll end with one idea and one story. So I have a story by the Chanukah Licht as well. Idea number one, Emunah. Feel that closeness to Hashem. Feel that Or HaGadol, that light, that Hashem is mamish coming down, the Kedusha into our homes. Idea number two, it's understanding that the physical possessions that we have is just to get us to a higher level of closeness to Hashem. It's a means to an end, not an end to itself. That's the whole idea of what the Beis HaMikdash is about, elevating the physical into the world of the spiritual. The third idea is the Yerech, is the Hod, is the idea of not being able to appreciate, not being able to thank Hashem. We have Modim, we bow down, we recognize. Lahalo Lahodos, the whole idea of Hanukkah, sit by the Neiros. Thank Hashem for all the blessings that we do have, and there are many blessings. Appreciate all that goodness. Hanukkah is a time of connecting to appreciation, of being able to recognize that everything we have comes from Hashem, to open up our hand, and to be able to give to others, to open up our mouths appropriately, and to daven for others. Finally, Hanukkah is about the war of Mesiras Nefesh, that the Cheshvonayim went out with the same midah as Yaakov Avinu. It's a midah of Mesiras Nefesh, it's a midah of what Hanukkah is about. It's a midah of moving beyond yourself. As the Sfasemas points out in 37, we light outside to remind ourselves of one of the reasons of the Mesiras Nefesh of Yosef HaTzadik, Vayanos Vayetzei Achutza, move beyond the world that we live in. Moser Nefesh, push that envelope, go beyond. On a practical level, my friends, with the 2 minutes that we have left, says Rav Biederman, Ha'etza yuta l'kabela tzvo kabela tova ba'it kazot. There's so much ruchnias, there's so much power in Hanukkah. How do we take it? What's the kli kibul? What's the vessel for us to take it? It's that same vintage vessel that was used. We need to be moser nefesh. How so? By creating one kabbalah. One small thing that we take on ourselves that pushes us that much closer to Hashem. It could be something new, or it could be something that we're doing. To have kavod and a bracha. To stand and say Asher Yetzer. To be able to, you know, really stop and say Shalom Aleichem and ask somebody how they're doing. 3 people a day. Whatever it is. What we're doing and doing it better. Hanukkah, this is what the Hanukkah is about. That should be a Kabbalah Tova 41. Kafi, that you're able to do midei yom, biyomo, bikvius, every single day without fail. And nothing will break this from happening. And he notes here very beautifully, Rameh Pershalan, also a Rippershalan, also a Hasidic Rebbe, he says, we read on Hanukkah about the Nesim bringing their gifts. And one of the things that we read it 12 times, is kaf achad asara zaha malei ektore. A kaf achad, one spoonful, is filled with 10. So here, my friends, we see the kaf echad, which we see was so negative, the kaf being the thigh. We can also turn the pach into something positive. A kaf echad, one spoon, he says, is a klif echad. When you're mevater matzvah, when you give something up, saying kavan on a bracha, you're giving up your time, you're giving up your mental space, whatever it is, when you give something up, then you become a sarazahav. You become a golden Jew. A sarah is 10, which is a yid, yud. You become a golden Jew. And then you become a leach Torah. You become someone who is so beloved to Hashem, a reach dichorach to Hashem, a kaf echad, a kfif echad, being able to take on one Kabbalah at the beginning of Chanukah and say, this is Chanukah, Tavshin Ayin Zayin, my Mesiras Nefesh, whatever it is, whatever you can hold to every day. And he points out that if you're taking this on, it means you're able to do it. It's within your realm to do. You become a kaf echad. You become an asara zahav. You become a golden yid. And you're Malayak Torah. Listen to this story, my friends, and we'll end with this. It's a story Rabbi Biederman tells. It's a true story. Happened recently. In contemporary times. There was a bacher who was learning in Eretz Yisrael, came from America, who was visiting back home, and he had his tefillin in a handbag, and he took a taxi back to his house, and this happens a lot. He left his tefillin in the car, in the taxi. And when he gets home, he says, oh my gosh, I lost my tefillin. Now, for boys, like tefillin is, you know, to a bar mitzvah, it's something they connect to, also a lot of money. Oh my gosh, I don't have my tefillin. There was no name in it. There is no way. And he also felt bad, like, what's going to happen? They're going to throw it away. Like, I left the sefer in the Cleveland airport. What worried me more, aside from all my underlines were in it, was it got thrown away. That was so painful. Like, somebody had a kedusha. Like, so, anyway, it's and the list of safer, obviously, don't get me wrong. But then I can always bring back. But that's safer. Look, the Mishnah. So he says, you know what? I'm going to take a Kabbalah on myself, and in that schus, I should be able to have my tefillin returned to me, even though, like, the chances are, like, zoo. He said, I will not speak Dvarim Chulin, anything not related to Kedusha, or not speak at all, while I have my tefillin on my head. Goes to Davi Mincha that day, this is a few days after he came back, and a random guy comes over to him and says, do you know who these belong to? And it was his tefillin. He says, how did you get them? He says, today I was in a taxi cab, and the taxi cab says, oh, you look like the fellow I took a few days ago. He left this pouch here. Maybe you know who it is, maybe you know who it belongs to. And I started asking people, because the name was a very common name, you know, embroidered on the thing without a telephone number, like David Cohen, you know. And I decided to go into the shul today in Mincha time and ask who it belongs to. He understood clearly this Kabbalah brought him this. He keeps to this Kabbalah like ironclad. He gets married. He moves to Eretz Yisrael. He builds a family. Fast forward many years. Back on an airplane, visiting America, comes back to Eretz Yisrael. On his trip back to Eretz Yisrael, he's on an LL plane, which has, some of you may know, you can listen to Torah Shirim. He decides that this is amazing. Like, you know, people won't have to waste their time. They can mamish, instead of, you know, it's hard sometimes to read on a plane, you can mamish listen to Shirin. I have to tell people about this. When can I tell people about this? After davening is the best time. So he says, I'm wearing my tefillin, I made a Kabbalah not to talk. This is an exception because it's Torah. So he says, Rabosai, I want you to know this is how you can get Torah Shirim. He makes this announcement right after davening. Well, as you can expect, my friends, he lands in Lud. And however it happens, he leaves his carry-on in the airport, and when he gets back home, he realizes his tefillin. And he says, I know, it was clear. I was debating whether I should say it or not. I shouldn't have said it. Hashem, chav v'lo yavur, I take this Kabbalah on. I will not speak. Please, and that's chus, let me get back my tefillin. A few hours later, he gets a phone call that, I want to bring over your tefillin. He says, how'd you have my tefillin? Again, he wasn't that smart, yeah? He didn't put his name and number in it. He says, so he figured out what happened. What happened? When he got to the airport, they asked him, like they asked all of us, are you taking anything for anybody else? And we always say, no, 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 right? Or maybe say, yes, 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 I don't know. He was taking a letter for somebody. And he said, yes, I'm taking something for somebody. They said, well, today, so I don't know. They open up a suitcase, he takes out the letter, they look at it, they see it's a letter, and instead of putting it back in a suitcase, he puts it in his carry-on with his tefillin. when the person found the carry-on, there was no identification, but they saw that letter. They called the number, it was a name and number, you know how we give letters to people. They called that person and said, is anyone expecting to give you a letter? Oh, yes, so-and-so is. And he called so-and-so and got his tefillin back. Chok v'lo yavur. A Kabbalah connects us to a higher level. A Kabbalah protects us when we take these things on. As we sit by the candles, let's see how we can be Moser Nefesh, and that we can become that vintage vessel, that this Kabbalah will stay with us for years and years afterwards, and it's our beautiful connection to the light and the energy of Hanukkah.